There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Hi, welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting not live, but still from Montreal. My name is Amy Lloyd. Today we broadcast from the Geojiage, the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations. The time now is 5:01.
Hi everybody, my name is Maya Bitson and I'm still social distancing here in Toronto. I hope everybody is staying both healthy and happy. Today, Amy has conducted an interview with Jessica Chiano, who is a coordinator of the Iskwehu Project. Run out of the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal, the Iskwehu Project's goals include responding as quickly and efficiently as possible to disappearances of Indigenous women, girls, trans, and two-spirited peoples. This includes adequate support from institutions for family and loved ones, as well as the oversight of a proper missing persons investigation. This is a super interesting project, and we will link the website on our Twitter after the show. Just search it Unfit to Print. Today, however, we're mainly talking to Jessica about shelter work during the COVID-19 pandemic and how marginalized populations are being particularly affected by the virus. We're playing this interview after a few songs and, of course, our weekly headline roundup as per usual, so stay tuned.
broken child, you healed your beautiful scars. Look at the way that you are, you will get 5 golden stars. Hard to believe you was a broken child, you healed your beautiful scars. Nothing scares me more than real life horror stories. Like the world is ending, like the world is done. Like it's all gone and left no one. Jeez, really should've rolled another one. Might as well let it all come undone. Now I fear it all anyways. Don't let it paralyze you in any way. Easy to say, not easy to do. Easy my ways and not being my truth. What can I say? It's not easy to be. Hard stuff to swallow and the pills ain't free. Easy to say, not easy to do. Easy my ways and not being my truth. What can I say? It's not easy to be. Hard stuff to swallow and the pills ain't free. Hard to believe you was a broken child, you healed your beautiful scars. Look at the way that you are, you will get 5 golden stars. Hard to believe you was a broken child, you healed your beautiful scars. A big building, huge crowd, some big feelings. Sash came to tell me that the world was ending. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? She didn't seem worried, she didn't seem frightened at all. I knew she was telling the truth and I wanted a ball. I ran to my mom, no time to stall. She was busy teaching a class. I pointed to the window and said, look at that flash. Look at that flash. I said, look at that flash. I pointed to the window and I said, look at that flash.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. That was Hoopla by Limes, followed by Demo by Emma Becco. Now for our weekly headline roundup. Recent polls amongst Canadian civilians show a general approval of what federal and provincial politicians are doing in response to the coronavirus. Though not a very high bar, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has rated higher than Trump in regards to the population's approval of his COVID policy. Recent polls show that about two-thirds, or around 65% of Canadians, approve of the federal government's management of the pandemic, whereas 49% of Americans approve of Trump's. However, these statistics still ranks Trudeau below other world leaders, such as Angela Merkel of Germany and Boris Johnson of the UK, both of whom have approval ratings of over 70%. So as of yesterday, the UK had around 3.5 times more cases than Canada, and Germany had about 10 times more cases. However, both of these countries have been doing a lot more testing than a lot of other countries. In surprising turn of events, however, the Legault government of Quebec leads satisfaction polls, with our provincial government coming in at a 93% approval rating, even though Quebec has the most coronavirus cases of any other province. This seems like an unusual statistic, especially considering the party only received 37% of the vote in the 2018 Quebec general election. However, citizens of the province have commended Legault's transparent approach regarding the outbreak, as well as his swift decisiveness in putting the province in a partial lockdown.
The BC government announced last week that they will be supplying safe prescription drugs in order to avoid users turning to possibly toxic drugs during the pandemic. Minister of Mental Health and Addictions, Judy Darcy, issued a statement saying, quote, "It will ensure that less people turn to the poison drug supply, and it will ensure that less people have to venture out to pharmacies regularly and still put themselves at risk and put the community at risk," unquote. According to CBC, quote, "British Columbia currently faces two public health emergencies, one related to the rapid spread of COVID-19, the other being the ongoing opioid overdose crisis declared an emergency back in 2016, unquote. Social distancing and the closing of borders limits one's access to drugs, meaning they may face serious withdrawal symptoms in quarantine. Cheyenne Johnson, co-interim executive director of the BC Center on Substance Abuse, stated that, quote, "As the effects of the pandemic continue to unfold, the illicit drug supply is likely to become significantly more adulterated and toxic," unquote. Supplying safe drugs will ensure folks self-isolate and have their needs met. According to the CBC, quote, "Those eligible to access the safe supply under provincial guidelines include people at risk of COVID-19 infection or who are suspected of being infected, people with a history of ongoing active substance use, people at high risk of withdrawal, overdose, craving, or other harms related to drug use, youth under the age of 19 who provide informed consent and receive additional education," unquote.
A group of Amazon Fulfillment Center employees in Staten Island, New York, engaged in a walkout yesterday, demanding the company to close temporarily for extensive cleaning. Led by employee Chris Smalls, the strike has come after numerous concerns from Amazon staff workers in the U.S. and Italy, who say the lack of virus protection in warehouses are far from adequate, and many are worried about contracting COVID while on the job. Smalls told Bloomberg TV yesterday that leading the strike cost him his job at the Staten Island warehouse. He was apparently laid off for breaking quarantine and striking after being exposed to an employee who had tested positive in New York. Furthermore, Amazon employees in California, Florida, and Seattle have been tested positive for the coronavirus, further sparking concerns for the health of those in the crowded warehouses. Amazon delivery services have been in high demand in the past month as many are ordering supplies to their home rather than venturing out to the stores and purchasing items themselves. Though these are proper social distancing protocols, one must consider how our demands from sites such as Amazon impact the employees' health and safety as they are working harder in dangerous conditions. U.S. senators, too, have written to CEO Jeff Bezos expressing concerns regarding the apparent lack of shortage of protective and cleaning supplies for employees. Though Amazon has reduced its shipping capacities in Italy momentarily, the company has spoken to the press about their desire to hire 100,000 more American factory workers as business continues booming during quarantine. This is not the first time that Mr. Bezos has gotten into hot water regarding the poor treatment of his employees, as last year Amazon faced criticism for cutting the healthcare benefits of 1,900 of its part-time workers. This is not the first allegation of employee mistreatment from the company. Taking action, Bezos announced his gratitude in an open letter to Amazon staff this past month. Furthermore, he's announced he will raise the wages of U.S. employees by $2 and U.K. employees by £2 as they are currently asked to work overtime.
With the closure of many non-essential businesses, tenants are worrying about how they will pay rent come the beginning of April. Montreal, like many cities across the world, is participating in a rent strike, which will hopefully lead to a rent freeze indefinitely. According to the McGill Daily, quote, rent freezes are crucial during this time. Although employment insurance now includes those who have lost their job due to COVID-19, there's been no consideration of how the shutdown will impact those who rent in the coming months. Landlords face less financial instability than their tenants because they derive their incomes from ownership rather than labor. Banks have frozen mortgage payments for the next 6 months. Besides refusing to pay rent, the strike also aims to, quote, block evictions and rent evictions and open up vacant housing, including Airbnbs, empty condos, and hotels to house homeless people or those who lack safe housing. To learn more about the rent strike, you can join the Facebook group Rent Strike Montreal. If you are in the position to do so, consider helping out in other ways by joining the Facebook group MTL COVID Mutual Aid Mobilization in order to learn how you can be of an assistance to your community, unquote. We will link these groups to our Twitter after the show. Search for Unfit to Print.
And just to remind folks that although Premier Legault is insisting that landlords will be understanding, an overwhelming majority of landlords are still insisting that rent be paid tomorrow. Many landlords are also threatening to start initiating evictions, even though they've been suspended, using late payments during a crisis as a basis to declare tenants in frequent delay, a reason that allows the régie to cancel a lease and evict a tenant. And hearings are actually only canceled until, or they're only suspended, I mean, until April 7th. So though the government may be appearing to be understanding, it's actually not true. Many landlords are still expecting tenants to pay rent despite the fact that many non-essential businesses have now closed. And in a press release from Group d'Arps Blancs, they actually were able to talk to some people on the ground. One person, Jesse Delke, a tenant in already substandard housing in Rosemont La Petite Patrie, says that, quote, 9 months ago I was homeless, but I finally managed to land on my own feet with a part-time job, but then recently I was fired like everyone else. Rachel Tremblay, who is a tenant from Hochega Maisonneuve, actually who started the petition on change.org, who was not able to pay rent tomorrow, states, quote, it's stunning to me that the situation has been left to linger so long. It is hypocritical for Premier Legault to express concern for the mental health of residents when he should know that one of the main factors of mental health is knowing you have secure long-term housing. Also, Jesse, who I recently just quoted, said that, quote, Quebec hasn't issued a province-wide rent freeze and instead is supporting businesses and ignoring the most vulnerable people affected by the pandemic. The only thing I and so many other working class people in Quebec can do is withhold our rent, unquote. So again, we will be linking the Facebook group and as well as other
sources to learn more about the rent strike. So for context, this next headline is going to be unusually short, as it was included last minute. So the Environmental Defense issued a press release today stating that, quote, Premier Kenney has announced that the government of Alberta will subsidize construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, prioritizing the expansion of the oil and gas industry even over its own healthcare system. This $7.6 billion gift to one pipeline company is a reckless use of public money that could be better spent supporting physicians and workers across the province. The price of oil dipped below $6 last week, yet with this move, the Alberta government is further increasing its exposure to an oil market in freefall. Now is not the time to be further betting on the ongoing expansion of the industry that must become smaller to ensure a climate-safe future. It is the time to be putting in place a recovery program with measures to hasten a just transition for workers in the sector. Furthermore, starting construction during the COVID-19 pandemic is irresponsible. Unquote. And that concludes our weekly headline roundup. Next, we'll be playing our interview with Jessica from the Ishkwe Project. So stay tuned after these songs.
One day, one, let's take this one day at a time. No more assumptions, I have no reason. Let's take this one day at a time. No more oblivion, I have no reason. I won't remember if after all. Just a
kind to let it all aside. You came to play a kind. Today I'm on my way home. You count my ways, I can't delay. I'm not the one to wait on.
I've been waiting on the phone each time it comes. I've been waiting on the phone every time it comes. I've been waiting on the phone each time it comes. I've been waiting on the phone.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. That was If After All by Common Holly, followed by Waiting on the Warmth by More More. Now it's time for our interview with Jessica, who is the coordinator of the Ishkwe Project. Run out of the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal, the Ishkwe Project's goals include responding as quickly and efficiently as possible to the disappearances of Indigenous women, girls, trans, and two-spirited peoples. This includes adequate support from institutions for family and loved ones, as well as the oversight of a proper missing persons investigation. This project is incredibly important and incredibly interesting, and we will link the project to our website after the show on our Twitter, so search for Unfit to Print. Today, however, we will be mainly talking to Jessica about shelter work during COVID-19 and how the virus impacts the homeless population, specifically Indigenous folks living in homelessness. We want to issue a content warning. This interview does discuss colonialism as well as racialized and sexualized violence. Uh,
Amid the COVID-19 pandemic, governments around the world have been ordering people to stay inside and practice social distancing in order to flatten the curve. Although these precautionary measures are necessary to prevent the transmission and infection of the novel coronavirus, not everyone is in the position to do so. Those living in homelessness are amongst the demographic of people who do not have the option to self-isolate. In turn, those living in homelessness are extremely vulnerable when it comes to contracting the virus. Elected officials have yet to properly address and solidify procedures for the homeless population regarding quarantine. Additionally, shelters and their frontline workers have yet to receive adequate support to operate shelters despite being promised funding. A couple days ago, Stuart Greville, who is 62 years old and currently homeless, was tested for COVID-19. After his test, a nurse told Greville he must self-isolate while waiting for his results. Greville told the Montreal Gazette that, quote, "Last night I got into the YMCA by the skin of my teeth. I got the 105th bed out of 107. I was at the old Royal Victoria, but they moved us downtown because it's safer. I'm headed to the YMCA now, but I don't know if there's still room. And even if there is it a good idea for me to be there? I could infect someone or they could infect me," unquote. Quebec's health ministry promised the old brewery mission that they would have now have access to hotel rooms for quarantine purposes. However, Matthew Pierce, the executive director of the Old Brewery Mission, says that this promise has yet to be delivered. Resilience Montreal moved its meal services outdoors in order to avoid hosting nearly 200 individuals in one room. While setting up in Cabot Square last Thursday, police forces arrived attempting to shut it down because the Resilience Montreal apparently did not have the permits to host such an event in a park. Nasquette, who is the executive director of the Native Women's Shelter and founded Atwater Ave, issued a statement saying, quote, "We're getting resistance from the city because of permit issues. We're trying to get a large tent to at least get people out of the rain, but it's not happening. Things are going to go from bad to worse out here," unquote. David Chapman, who is in charge of Resilience Montreal, stated that, quote, "The homeless are sleeping outside in groups, sharing bottles of beer, while the rest of the city self-isolates. If this virus hits this community, it'll hit them hard," unquote. Despite the whole city of Montreal being essentially on lockdown, provincial leaders have disregarded an entire community of the city. The government already lacked a proper infrastructure for supporting shelters and those living in homelessness. However, considering how risky this pandemic is, it is concerning to see their delay in taking constructive action. As mentioned earlier, in response to the pandemic, shelters are beginning to move their services outdoors. According to CTV, quote, "Outdoor shelters are being set up in several locations as a part of an effort to keep the virus from spreading. On Saturday, city workers prepared tents for the homeless population in Place Émile Galon, while a similar site was already up and running in Cabot Square. Along with tents, hand washing stations and portable toilets were put in place. Three other sites have also been designated, with the city saying that they hope to accommodate up to 1,000 people," unquote. Nasquette, who as mentioned before, is the executive director of the Native Women's Shelter, issued a statement saying, quote, "We'll be able to respect all the protocols in place, but it's something that might not be perfect from the very beginning. It's not really conducive to social distancing because it looks like you could put four people under a tent. We are literally playing catch up at this point. Whenever they've been on the streets for the last 3 or 4 weeks, they've been in groups. That's how they survive. We need to have that education. We need to have a doctor here. We need to have a testing site here," unquote. On March 22nd, the Montreal Indigenous Community Network issued a letter addressing the federal, provincial, and municipal authorities. The beginning of the letter reads, quote, "The network is focused on addressing the safety and well-being of First Nation, Métis, and Inuit in Montreal. Indigenous people living in homelessness are in the most precarious position due to their lack of access to private shelter for isolation or social distancing and proper sanitation, i.e. washing, changing clothing, etc. As such, we are in regular contact with the operating Indigenous serving organizations on the front line in Montreal, including Resilience Montreal, Projects Atchassons de Québec, Open Door, Native Women's Shelter of Montreal, Chaise Dores, and the Indigenous Support Workers Group, and the Indigenous Support Workers Project. Needs and realities are changing rapidly," unquote. Later in the letter, the Montreal Indigenous Community Network discusses priority needs. Additionally, the letter confronts reducing financial burdens. This reduction includes reimbursing frontline workers for all COVID-19 related costs. Furthermore, nonprofit organizations will, quote, "not lose fundings if they have
to temporarily suspend or change activities to adapt to emergent needs related to the COVID-19 pandemic, unquote. And lastly, quote, that nonprofit organizations will be permitted to carry over any and all 2019-2020 surpluses to resume activities after this crisis is over, unquote. On the 25th, the network released another letter addressed to Prime Minister Trudeau, Dr. Theresa Tam, who is the Public Health Agency of Canada, Patty Hajou, who is the Minister of Health Canada, Chrystia Freeland, who is the Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Intergovernmental Affairs, Bill Blair, who is the Minister of Public Health and Safety, Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness, Mark Miller, who is the Indigenous Minister, the Minister of Indigenous Services Canada, Caroline Bennett, who is the Minister of Crown, Indigenous Relations and Northern Affairs in Canada, Bill Morneau, who is the Minister of Finance, Harjit Sajjan, who is the Minister of National Defense, Jonathan Vance, who is the Chief of National Defense, and Jean-Yves Duclos, who is the Housing Minister. This letter stated that, quote, as of today, March 25th, the Indigenous serving homeless centers slash shelters have yet to actually receive a single resource from any level of government. No supplies, no workers, no actual dollars in the bank, unquote. The letter sought to remind folks that a, quote, isolated shelter still does not exist for those without homes. Still today, those living in homelessness do not have the option to practice social distancing or voluntary isolation. We also have not received any information indicating that this is being planned, unquote. The network concluded with the concluded the letter saying, quote, it has become increasingly clear that existing systems do not have the capacity to protect First Nation, Inuit, and Métis living in homelessness in Montreal, unquote. The letter also called on the Canadian government to set up an emergency shelter. Then, on March 26, the Canadian government issued a statement on the official government website. Mark Miller, the Minister of Indigenous Services, provided a $305 million aid relief fund for, quote, the new distinctions based on Indigenous Community Support Fund to address immediate needs in the First Nation, Inuit, and Métis Nation communities related to COVID-19, unquote. Since the 26th, there has been no reports of receiving said funding, as details are still being finalized. Granted, motions such as these take time. However, considering the nature of COVID-19, governments must act as quickly as possible. Furthermore, the question still remains, is $305 million a sustainable amount? Well, according to APTN News, Grand Chief Joel Abram believes, quote, that money is going to run out pretty quick, unquote. Grand Chief Abram said also that, quote, it is likely that the virus has already spread extensively in the First Nations community and we can expect a much greater number of cases in the coming weeks, unquote. Additionally, Abram pointed out that, quote, First Nations face a greater risk due to overcrowding, isolation, declining infrastructure, limited internet access, and lack of healthcare resources. Because of higher rates of chronic illness and lower detriments of health, the letter said that the First Nations expect a much higher mortality rate, unquote, as stated by APTN News. FSIN Chief Bobby Cameron stated during a media release that, quote, the $305 million earmarked is for First Nations, Métis, and Inuit to share. That is not enough to match the actual resources required to properly put in place preventative measures to deal with the spread of COVID-19. Our nation needs additional medical equipment and supplies, including personal protective equipment, PPEs, medicines, oxygen tanks, and masks, bronchiolators, and steroids. We also need additional nurses and doctors too in our rural and remote communities, so our people don't have to wait or travel for treatment if required, unquote. It is evident that the Canadian government has yet to put in place a stable pandemic plan regarding Indigenous communities, especially the homeless population. There is an intersection between living in homelessness while also living in a settler colonial society. To better understand that relationship between those two factors, we spoke to Jessica, the coordinator of the Ishkwe Project at the Native Women's Shelter. Jessica will discuss shelter work during COVID-19, settler colonial institutions, safety concerns the Indigenous population, the Indigenous homeless population may deal with or are dealing with right now, and lastly, ways that we can help. As mentioned earlier, the Ishkwe Project's goals include responding as quickly and efficiently as possible to disappearances of Indigenous women, girls, trans, and two-spirited peoples. This includes adequate support from institutions for family and loved ones, as well as the oversight of a proper missing persons investigation. We want to issue a content warning. This interview does discuss colonialism as well as racialized and sexualized violence. So you are the coordinator of the Ishkwe Project, which is associated with the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal. So would you mind, just for listeners who do not know, talking a bit about the project?
Well, Ishkwe started in 2017, and it was an initiative by the Native Women's Shelter and other Indigenous organizations like Quebec Native Women, where they created they applied for funding to have a coordinator to support families when an Indigenous woman or girl, trans or two-spirit, goes missing, to do the initial police report and to follow up with the police in order to locate the missing woman. And as well to have somebody to do a lot of prevention when it comes to preventing women from going missing and being murdered. So that's just kind of like a quick summary of where the project started in 2017. And the reason why it came about is because at the shelter and in other Indigenous organizations, what was noticed is when a woman hadn't come back, an Indigenous woman hadn't come back to the shelter, and the workers were trying to do a police report, often it was met with resistance from the police of not wanting to take the initial report, and it would just kind of be, they would just say, oh, she's probably off on a bender, we don't need to take this report. So that's why we created this project.
So now I want to talk about your work in the context of COVID-19. What does working in a shelter with a shelter look like right now?
Well, right now, I mean, it's the staff that's working there are those who are younger, who are healthy, who don't have children or might not have to care for someone. So it's like really limited the amount of workers that are there. So it's definitely really challenging. As well, there's a lot of challenges because there's a lot of communal spaces. So it's the women now have to stay in their rooms and doing the best they can in trying to sanitize everything. As well, we have babies and children. So it's quite like stressful, especially with COVID-19, to have especially essential services like this, the shelter, to have to go through this, because already the women are facing a lot of challenges at being homeless. And you know, I'd like to emphasize that if the shelter wasn't open, there'd be probably a lot of children being placed in new protection. So because with women, they wouldn't have a home. So it's quite chaotic, and my colleagues are very brave. I'm working from home because I have children, so I've been doing the best I can, and I'm very grateful to the work that they're doing.
So you mentioned communal spaces, so I'm wondering, is social distancing an accessible solution for those living in homelessness?
I think it's not even a possibility, and I think that if the government expecting that homeless people have to practice social distancing while they're living on the street, while most drop-ins are closing, while they're scrounging for food and trying to survive and make ends meet just to eat for the day, is like, it's not a realistic way. Also, a lot of the women I work with, they need to be close, like in proximity to maybe people that protect them on the street, or just like if you're sleeping on the street. Asking people to isolate themselves on the street doesn't seem like a really logical solution. And I mean, myself and my organization, other organizations that people work with homelessness, we've been saying for the past couple of weeks to give people a room, a hotel room, right away, so that we can prevent the spread. And as you heard, like yesterday, there was a case at Oberoi Mission. We knew that it was a matter of time, and once it like gets onto the street like that, it's very difficult to control the spread of the virus when people don't even have like basic housing, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. And when it comes to testing and sanitation, do you think so far that the provincial government has taken into account the Indigenous folks living in homelessness and how they're going to access these necessary healthcare resources?
I mean, there's definitely people on the upper level of the government that we're in communication with all the time. However, it was like, because it's everything should have been done yesterday. So, and as well, like, yeah, I mean, there definitely needs to be a lot of things weren't taken into consideration. like at the Royal Vic. Those are going to be co-ed spaces. There's going to be men, a lot of women who have been assaulted by their aggressor. They don't go to those kinds of places because they don't want to run into their aggressor. Women, like, also, I just know that, like, there's been a lot of planning for these kind of crises since SARS. So I feel like the government should have been way better prepared to deal with this issue. Mm-hmm. Because they did it with SARS, they did it with H1N1, and so they knew this, the homeless population, marginalized, especially, like, marginalized populations were the ones that are going to suffer the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they don't have the resources to protect themselves.
So on March 22nd, Montreal Indigenous Community Network released a letter focusing on the, quote, safety and well-being of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit in Montreal, unquote. One of the organizations mentioned in the letter is the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal. So I'm wondering, how have elected officials, as well as the Montreal community in general, responded to this letter?
I mean, I think it's very, it's positive within the community, and I think that even government officials, they are welcoming it. I think it's just to put things into action.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think sometimes when you're working on the field, government officials don't think of a lot of things. So, you know, it's for us to bring that up. Like I've, like, you know, mentioned, what are we going to do when people are on withdrawal? You know, there's different ways to deal with this. But we have an enormous amount of literature and research to be able to respond correctly. So it's not that we don't have the knowledge, but sometimes when you're not working on the ground, it's difficult for people to see that. So
mm-hmm.
If somebody goes into isolation and they might have an issue with drinking, what are we going to do? You know, like, is there going to be medical care to assist them? Right now, the government is only going to be offering housing to people who show symptoms. I think that it should be everyone on the street should be just be offered a room until this pandemic is over.
Mm-hmm.
Because people often don't show symptoms right away. And also, often living on the street, you often are just really have, like, flu symptoms. Just, like, living on the street all the time, you're going to always have it. So, I mean, the idea that people need to go have a test, then to be able to get a room is not always very realistic for a lot of people, especially Indigenous community, who do not go to the system, are very, very often badly treated by the healthcare system. So it's not a reaction that they will go get tested to, like, when often they're discriminated against and not treated well. So I think overall, like, it would be a lot simplifying, would actually save a lot of people's lives. They just went ahead and gave everybody, like, a hotel room.
Mm-hmm. And the letter also mentioned that a lot of these shelters have been promised funding, but it has yet to be delivered. So why do you think it's so difficult for specifically Indigenous-serving shelters to receive said funding?
I think it just goes through a, like, long history of like, structural racism, of not trusting Indigenous organizations. Also because the Indigenous organizations are, like, a lot less than non-Indigenous organization. It's a lot of scrambling. We're often just responding in, like, urgency. Like, we're putting out fires. So it's just often it's very telling that areas of the west of Montreal have a lot less services until recently, when we opened Resilience, and other parts of the city where there's a lot less non-Indigenous people. So also here in Quebec, the funding applications, some of them are all in French, and a lot of people in the Indigenous community that work don't necessarily are very fluent in French, so that's why we get a lot of federal funding when there is actual Quebec provincial funding. But if all the applications are in French, it's a lot more challenging. So, yeah, there's different ways. I am really hopeful that they will give money to the Native Women's Shelter and other shelters ASAP to deal with this.
What are some of your greatest concerns that you have for Indigenous folks living in homelessness?
That there's going to be not only they're going to contract COVID-19, but there's going to be an increase in violence, especially against Indigenous women, especially Indigenous women in the sex trade. People with mental health issues are not going to be taken care of because the healthcare system is overloaded. There really isn't a plan to really deal with a population that already has a lot of issues And I think it would, we were scrambling before, we were like barely making it before, so now it's just like complete chaos. That they're just like, I just feel that they aren't being treated like the rest of society. Like everyone's being told to self-isolate, but they are like, you only have to self-isolate if you test, but that's not the message we're giving to the rest of the population. So not responding to that need right away is very stigmatizing and hurtful. The like non-action to just allow people to just scramble for themselves and suffering and in survival is a very strong message of how they're not important and they're disposable. And that's what I've been hearing about a lot of my clients, that no one really cares about us if we die. Mm-hmm. I find it very, very heartbreaking.
And what are some of your greatest concerns that you have for frontline shelter workers?
Oh, that they're going to be, like, get sick, and they're going to be, it's incredibly stressful. I mean, every day they're going out. I want to also emphasize the majority of the people doing this work are women. Again, it's, like, women going out there and community workers are not, like, the highest paid in a lot of fields, and they do incredibly important work. That they're going to get sick or too stressed out, and they're not going to be able to continue this work, which is really important.
So part of your role at the Ishkwe project is working with police, and you mentioned in a previous interview with, I think it was Concordia, that there must be less over-policing. Last week, Quebec's chief medical officer stated that he has no problem, you know, ordering, making arrests, restricting people who are not respecting COVID-19 related orders.
Right.
Considering the colonial context behind many institutions, including the police force, how will this new mandate impact those without shelter, specifically Indigenous folks without shelter?
Well, I think it just gives the police another tool to keep violence against Indigenous people, to continue to surveil them, and as well asking them to do things. They're just going to keep fining or giving tickets, just not in any way helpful. Like, we know criminalization just often targets the most marginalized people, and there's a lot better ways of dealing with this crisis, such as, like, a lot of preventative measures, so that actually police don't have to, intervene and tell people not to gather. If homeless people are, like, talking together or trying to have, they need some kind of support, you know, they start finding them or putting them in jail. I am worried about that the Indigenous people might just get incarcerated. It's very difficult for us now because we're not on the field. So we don't know what's happening. So they can just maybe just arrest people. And, you know, having corona in the prison system is, like, another issue. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, more police isn't going to really, like, have a positive impact on the homeless community.
So amidst the pandemic panic, why do you think certain communities and elected officials are so quick to neglect the Indigenous homeless population here in Montreal?
I think it's, like, more of a reflection of society, how they don't really feel that homeless people deserve the same rights. Like, I'm not saying that everyone's society, but it seems to be a value that people who are on the street, it's because of their own fault, and it's because of their not this capitalist way of not working hard enough. And especially for Indigenous people, it actually is falls in the legacy of a genocide, of, like, not acting, not giving basic human rights. Like, we live in a country of apartheid, where if you're Indigenous or non-Indigenous, and if you're Indigenous, you have less rights, less access to all kinds of services. So I think that it's always about, like, the non-action, even with the missing Murray Indigenous women and girls. Like, the inquiry just highlighted the non-action of the government to address this crisis. So I think it's, like, in a lot of ways, it's I think that it's a reflection of how society sees people, Indigenous people, also people living in poverty, people use drugs, people struggle with mental health and struggle with addiction, as not being worthy of our society.
And I know that the Ishkwe project somewhat deals with, like, the sex industry. So I'm wondering, how will, and from what your understanding of the industry is, how will COVID-19 impact folks that are experiencing or facing homelessness who rely on sex work?
I mean, you're just putting people out to take on clients that might be violent because there's less of a market, because it's harder to make money. When you put people in a desperate situation, that's when violence goes up. So it's the same thing like with the drug trade. Like, drugs are becoming more expensive, less accessible, so people become more violent when they're put in situations of desperation. And, you know, like, it's people, sex workers who do it on the street, and that's their sole income, then it's very difficult to ask them to stop doing that when there's no other, and nothing else is being presented to them to assist them.
And additionally, what are some other ways that the Indigenous homeless population will be greatly affected by COVID-19 that people wouldn't usually think of?
I just think that, like, I think that because of colonization, there's a lot of, like, health issues that have been passed on. Like, diabetes is very high within the Indigenous community. I just think that they will be, might get sick a lot quicker. And I think that, I think it just, like, will create, like, as well, a lot more displacement. We're seeing that right now. Like, people are being told to go back to their community, when that's not necessarily, like, a good solution if they've been living on the street. I just think, unfortunately, I don't want to be too pessimistic. I think that we will see, like, an H1N1. And other crises, it's going to be the Indigenous community that's going to be one of the most affected, and we might see the most high tolls of death among that community.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think people think about that because of all the different issues and challenges and the structural racism. They're going to be the first to be impacted so negatively. And I'd also like to say that the government didn't offer anything to urban Indigenous people. They offered for only people that are living in community and on reserve. And that there should have been some kind of financing for urban Indigenous people going through this crisis, because a lot of Indigenous people move to the city because they don't have anything in their community. So they're being displaced. And that was totally an oversight. There's nothing being offered to the urban Indigenous community.
And what are ways Montrealers can help frontline workers and Indigenous serving shelters during this pandemic?
I think, like, everything that, like, Resilience has been asking, like, making food, giving out, they're asking to make chili. I mean, if you have a car and you can possibly go pick up something, anything to, like, if you just ask what needs to be done. Sometimes it's, like, little things like that, like, you know, going to get a coffee maker that broke, you know, can you go do that? Those things are incredibly helpful, especially for frontline staff that are just, like, right in the midst of the crisis. And so that's definitely helpful. Money is always helpful. Donating to the Native Women's Shelter or other Indigenous organizations is also very helpful. And I just think, like, you know, having compassion and thinking about those people makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, what is one action or maybe a few actions that municipal authorities could take to better assist shelters who serve Indigenous folks that live in homelessness?
Well, it would just be to fund them adequately. That would be what is needed. And I know Native Women's Shelter has been waiting for years from the federal government for second stage housing. We don't have any housing for Indigenous women with their children. So it would actually just to increase the funding to all community organizations that work with Indigenous people, and we can definitely do a lot with that.
Okay, well, thank you so much for speaking with us today, Jessica.
No problem.
It is essential to support non-Indigenous organizations in any way you can during this pandemic. Many shelters are asking to bring in pre-prepared meals such as sandwiches, soups, chilies. Additionally, shelters are asking for clothing, water bottles, disposable containers, etc. If you are in the position to do so, shelters are also seeking volunteers and financial donations. Of course, please do not visit any shelters if you are experiencing COVID-19 symptoms, have been in contact with someone who's experiencing symptoms, or please do not visit shelters if you or those around you are not practicing social distancing. We will post a link to our Twitter after the show, including a list of Indigenous shelters and ways/guidelines for helping them. Just search for Unfit to Print. Once again, we want to thank Jessica for her interview, and we hope that you enjoyed this audio essay. Welcome back to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. We want to thank our listeners for tuning into another episode of Unfit to Print. Remember, we are still airing episodes, so don't forget to tune in next week at 5 p.m. Playing us out, we have Kate with Miss Shiny.
She call me diamond on the weekdays. Got so much pressure, that's why this song be stuck on replay. I got pressure, she call me diamond. No time for mistake, too scared for writing. You know I dream this reality since I was a youngin'. Write down who I be and now the manifestation's coming in. Now why you acting like that? Put your thoughts into the universe and she gon' bring it right back. You so hard on yourself, mama, you don't need that. No, you your biggest critic, girl. Best believe that. Best believe that. Best believe that. Cause why? I needed to hear that. Overthinking will be the death of me. And my pointless stressing won't be the remedy for my motivation that I feel I need. Ooh, I got pressure. She call me diamond on the weekday. Got so much pressure, that's why this song be stuck on replay. And I got pressure. She call me diamond on the weekday. Make me feel I'm not deserving of these things I do. And I only track your vibe and it's a G-Pot 2. And what's that? As a matter of fact, this is just a reminder that so happens to be a rap car. You're doing exactly what you wanna do. And now she fly into your state just to sing for you. And ooh, oh my, let's track up the time. Now, enough reflection, too much again. Stress, it won't be the remedy for my motivation that I feel I need. Ooh.